I gotta tell you, you know, sometimes the conversations before the show starts are actually pretty interesting. You know, you get talking about different stuff, and it kind of goes along with what we call floor duh. And Fish and Frank here, expanding on some of the duh moments around the state of Florida and other areas, I guess. Robert's in the chair across from me, and RJ's up in command and control. And we were talking about falling iguanas and the health threat to it.
Well, Frank, look at it this way. These things weigh how much, Robert? What does an iguana weigh, an average iguana?
Pound and a half, two pounds.
And it got these sharp spikes on them, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and they got claws.
And claws. And if they fall from a tree that's, say, 20 feet up in the air, the acceleration due to gravity is 33 feet per second squared. And so one of these guys hits you. That's, I think, how the major media has looked at all of this.
Well, I got to go along with major media, my butt. Again, let's call them the minor league mental media. Because the odds of you walking under a tree and getting hit by a fallen iguana, it's kind of like you were going to get hurt. I don't care what else went on. If that didn't happen, you were going to get hit by a car.
Meteorite. Gas tank from an airplane. Who knows?
I mean, yeah, something. I mean, you're going to get one
big
of those
chunk
frozen
of ice.
Waste things out of the back of the airplane, right? Something was going to get you. If your life revolves around worrying that an iguana paralyzed by the cold is going to fall out of a tree and hit you on the head, you've got a good life.
Right.
Yeah. You know, this is a life I would aspire to. Oh, my God, I'm going to walk under a tree and get hit by a paralyzed, you know, cold iguana, and it's going to hurt me or kill me. You should really be happy with that life. If I get to the point I can worry about that, boy, I did well.
Right. No kidding.
Right. Yeah.
And we were telling the story before we went on the air about the guy. This is several years back from El Joe Bean that had an old station wagon. And he went out on the island during one of the cold snaps. And he started collecting stunned, frozen iguanas. I guess they were going to sell them for meat or pets or whatever. And he stacked them up in the back of the station wagon.
Just started tossing them in the back.
Yeah, stacked them up quite neatly, you know. Yeah. Had them, and then he got in the car and he headed back out over. Turned the heater on, right. And so you know where this story's going, boys and girls. By the time he got to the bridge, he was being swamped by iguanas trying to get out.
Can you imagine 40 iguanas or more all running around in his station wagon, crawling at his head, biting him. He crashed into the bridge, right?
Crashed into the bridge, into the abutment on the bridge, yeah. So well, if you want to get hurt by an iguana, this is the way you do it. Go fill the car up and then turn the heater on.
Yeah. Go get a bunch of, you know, cold, stunned iguanas that look like they're dead, but they're not really dead. Throw them all in your car, turn the heater on, and start driving home. Now, one of the things they did a study a number of years ago, and because we're a predatory species, humans, and one of the reasons we evolved to the way we are today is because we started eating meat back in the early stages of human development. And meat proteins enlarged our brains for most of us. Most drivers on I-75, they seem to have a protein deficiency.
Yeah, eat more meat.
Yeah, eat more meat. But they were doing studies. And the truth of it is, for all you vegetarians out there, it's nice you want to be vegetarian. That's cool. But keep in mind, the human race, they had a line of vegetarian humans that died out because it's very hard to make a plant into a human, but it's taking an animal and making a human out of it. It's a much simpler process. You know, the proteins and all that make your brain grow and you can think better, as referenced by vegetarian. But there's a lot of nice vegetarians. I don't know of any good vegans, but vegetarians are cool. Vegans, they're just like, it's the only lifestyle less healthy than mine because I smoke and I drink too much coffee.
There's a good comparison for you.
But if you're a vegan, your life expectancy is actually less than me as a smoker. But they're going to be healthy because it's cool. Iguanas produce more meat per pound for what you feed them than almost all the other creatures, like cattle and all this. It takes a lot more food to get a pound of beef than it does a pound of iguana meat. And they have such a varied diet that you can feed them all kinds of stuff. So if people started eating iguana and we had iguana farms, if you wanted to go green and still be able to eat meat, that would be the way to go.
That makes sense. I could see that.
I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
It's actually quite tasty.
I haven't had it yet.
I was in Nuevo Laredo years ago, and I had, I guess it was broiled. They broiled the iguana meat, and they put sauces on it and stuff. But it was pretty good.
Oh, I can believe it.
I was going to say it tastes like chicken, but nobody will believe you.
But what is – we're in the Matrix, and nobody knew what chicken tastes like, so everything tastes like chicken?
That's right, yeah.
You know, so, you know, when you're programming a computer for our environment, you know, that's the way it goes. Speaking of pre-programmed environmental things, sheephead, Robert.
Yeah, they've been pretty incredible, actually, even before this cold front when it was really warm last week. They're all along the intercoastal, Pine Island, Placida area. The Tom Adams Bridge has been doing really good for a lot of your boat anglers that are just kind of anchoring up underneath over there in the Inglewood area. And then all the way up into Venice. I'm even hearing some pretty good reports up there in Sarasota Bay on guys fishing oyster bars up in there and catching them pretty well. You know, most of the guys are catching them on fiddler crabs. But I've had quite a few people in the last couple of days buying both frozen shrimp and the fish bites because they've been doing exceptionally well on that also.
Huh.
And there's not a lot of the really big giant ones left, you know, but I'm getting a lot of that 14, 15, and some 16-inchers, you know, good-sized ones.
Right. Flayable.
Absolutely.
Once they get down to 12 inches, for the amount of work you got to do, for the meat you get with that big head and all that.
Right.
I'm not there. If they're 14 inches, I'm all good. I'll eat sheephead because it's kind of worth the effort of filleting them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anything under that, a tag, I'm out.
Yeah.
It's
been interesting. And a lot of guys last week were seeing them up in the flats too. You know, if they were up there in Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, seeing some good numbers of them hanging around underneath the mangrove bushes, not just some of the isolated oyster patches. If there's some of those mangrove spots out there that have a little bucket where it's just a little deeper underneath it, it seems to have quite a few nice sheep's head underneath them too.
Well, you know, you go along and people forget that sheephead are not just by the bridges and all that. And in fact, some of your better sheephead is going to be under the mangroves. Now, if you have a spot that would normally hold snook or redfish under the mangroves, and in order for them to hold there, it's going to be a little deeper in that section. And so you get these little pockets of deep water under the mangroves. If I go up to Mangrove Shore and it just kind of slopes out and there's no trough, no holes, I don't go back there to fish because it's not going to hold fish. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these spots where redfish would normally be hanging out, there's a bunch of sheephead in them right now.
Right. And I have a technical question for you. You might be able to answer is that you get a lot of the guys that are fishing, like, say, the Placida Trestle, fishing from shore, El Jobin. They've even been getting quite a few there lately, too. But it seems like the guys who are fishing pilings and bridge embankments, stuff like that, that are, even if they're in a boat, they're still kind of almost vertical fishing for them. They all use, like, a just a regular hook. But a lot of the guys who try to target the sheep's head, say, over there in Whidden Bay around some of those oyster bars or up underneath the mangroves, they like to throw a lot of jig heads and have pretty good success with it. And I don't understand why the hookup ratio would be different with that over a J hook.
Well, basically, when you're using a jig head and some bait, you're bottom fishing with a sinker. Mm-hmm. Now, most the lead head part of the jig head acts as a sinker. That's really all it does. But when the fish moves it, he's going to be moving the entire jig head. A lot of the guys who don't have good hookup ratios with sheephead tie a sinker in place and then put their hook a foot, 2 foot away from it. And the hook can be moved to them, away, side to side quite a bit before you ever know a fish is biting. For the best hookup ratio, doing that is not a tied-on sinker or a jig head. It's taking your weight, putting your line through it so the line can easily slide through the sinker, tossing it out there with that and a hook. Then you can feel every little tiny bump on your line. The problem with the jig head is they're picking it up and the weight is part of the food. But as soon as that jig head moves, you know it. Whether it's coming at you, going away, whatever, you know it's moving because the hook and the weight are one piece. The problem with the guys throwing just the regular hook and a sinker, most of them have the sinker affixed to the line. So the line cannot slide through it, and the fish gets to play with the bait. And then finally, when it starts to move the sinker, then the person on the end of the line finds out about it. But before then, they're just picking all the bait off. As long as the line can freely slide through the sinker, a slip sinker rig, not a pinch-on split shot or anything, but an egg sinker or a bullet weight with the line going through it, then you're going to feel those bites. It's your number one way to catch sheephead outside of a vertical rig like a double drop. Okay. In that case, the sinker's all the way at the bottom. The fish pulls on it. You immediately feel the bite as well.
Right. Okay. I guess I can understand that.
But it's just about they're picking that jig head up to move the bait off of it. But, it's still a little bit of weight. If it's a very light jig head, they can easily move it. But you're feeling that. Move the line, move the weight right away because it's all one thing. Better process is a slip sinker. But so many guys, they don't like the sinker sliding up down the line. Tie it in place. Fix it in place. And therein lies the problem. Too much slack.
Okay. That makes sense.
All right. Let's see. Big confusion right now because the trout laws are changing in March.
February 1st.
February and March. Well, the trout laws are changing. The problem is the law is changing and what you're allowed to keep is changing. Instead of 4 trout, it goes to 3, and then you're only allowed 1 on a boat over 20 inches. The rest of them got to be smaller than that. The problem with it is it's still closed on this coast through most of the counties because of the emergency closure. And by emergency, I mean people on social media were being mean to FWC, so they closed it. That was the emergency, that reason why we had the closure.
Right.
The stocks are about the same as they were before the red tide, after the red tide. The stock assessments I found out yesterday haven't gone up and down much at all. They've been pretty much the same before the red tide, after the red tide. So there was no stock assessment research change. When we had the big freeze and a lot of snook died, they closed snook for a couple years because according to the stock assessments, they decreased their numbers by almost half. According to the red tide, it decreased the numbers by less than 10%, or 10% or less, I guess is the way to put it. So there was nothing done except social media pressure. People were saying bad things, mean things about FWC. And they can't abide by somebody saying mean things to them. Why do what's right or do the truth if you can just take the easy way out? Oh, look at us. We're great people. But the problem is the closure is still in effect, and that does not come up till May.
Right. Yeah, that's confusing because I think the meeting is like the 30th or the 31st of May for them to decide if they're going to open any of it again or when they're going to open any of it again. But the new regulations come out before that. So it's written very poorly, basically.
Right. So they can decide if they're going to open up redfish and keep the other ones closed or, and if they had half a brain, if there was a half a brain in the people running FWC, they would leave trout closed in this for one more year. That would actually do benefit the trout, because one more year of closure on the trout, we'd have a few more spawn and everything else. But if they really want to fix the problems, they need to put a closure on taking mullet. No commercial mullet take on the west coast of Florida. That will fix the trout population. That will even bring up the redfish populations. May affect snook, may not. But we have so many snook and redfish, they don't need help at this point. But if you're going to increase the trout population, you've got to close mullet, not close the trout.
Right.
Because trout are being a substitute forage fish for snook, cobia, redfish, trout, snook, everything out there. Ladyfish is eating small trout because there's not enough small mullet to go around. If they would close the mullet to commercial take for the next 2 years, we would have a huge increase in trout, and I'm going to assume snook, and several other species.
I think we're going to see it across the board.
You know,
it's a year-round forage fish. You know, it's not like a summertime staple or a wintertime staple like some of these other fish that are seasonal. Mullet's a year-round food source.
It's just hard to get people who are blunt, thick, and obtuse to understand one thing can affect another thing greatly. If you're playing pool, the cue ball affects the 8 ball because you're going to hit the 8 ball with the cue ball. And this is an effect where it's not – closing the trout is not going to do what closing mullet would. Close the mullet for 2 seasons and watch what happens to the trout population. It'll quadruple. And really, that would fix it. But you can't – that's not how they're going to think. They won't bring that into play. If the other fish are not feeding on the trout, that gives you a lot more trout.
Right.
Simple as that. So anyway, speaking of trout, has there been any around?
They've been okay, but not great. You know, the few schools that they're finding, there's a handful of the smaller schools around on the east wall and down in Pine Island and even up in Lemon Bay. But it's just been so blooming warm, they haven't bunched up in their little groups yet. The few fish that guys are finding, they have been finding a few bigger fish, especially down there towards between Captiva and basically Sanibel and some of those deeper grass flats, and then up there in Stump Pass area on some of those deeper grass beds, they're finding one fish, two fish, but those are like 20 to 22 inch fish, and we usually only find those in singles and doubles anyway. But I'm not having great numbers of the small fish. It's been very
it's still hard to find good numbers of trout.
Period.
RJ, yeah. My whole tirade about the mullet to the fish, that makes sense?
It certainly does. I'm gonna log on with you on that and tell everybody, get on your computers and start sending emails to FWC, because maybe they just don't know that connection. I don't know how they could not know that connection.
Well, because the people running FWC is somebody's brother-in-law or the sister's friend's barber's brother, you know. They're not scientists, and they're not even in the fishing industry. Well, they're just random people.
And if people can exert pressure on them over red tide to get all the game fish closures, they should be able to turn around, because it's a small amount of economic input in this area for mullet.
The mullet price worldwide dropped so drastically, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. I don't even know why they go out. They were
because they did. And they have, and it's a tradition. I'm going to go mullet fishing, but they're barely covering their gas.
Right.
So economically, it's not going to hurt a commercial fisherman, because mullet's worldwide. It's not a U.S. thing. Literally, mullet go worldwide. So some of the countries, the price is so low, and they're selling it so cheap that it literally makes no sense for the commercial guys to go after them. So it's not going to hurt them. There's no money in it anyway.
But you're also right about the fact that mullet is a major food source for everything, from the biggest shark on down to small snook, because they all eat mullet
down
fry.
To little trout, mangrove snappers, everything, because mullets start out, what, a 32nd of an inch long?
Pretty much microscopic, yeah.
Microscopic.
Yeah.
And as they go from microscopic sizes, just hatched out of a little fish egg, all the way on up to their very adult size, something is trying to eat them.
Yeah.
And if you're going to fix the fish populations and give us more fish and make the fishing better, you can't think like these eco nuts. Oh, well, it's a trout. We're just going to close trout if you can't keep them, the numbers will grow. Well, that's ridiculous. It doesn't work.
You got to have something to eat.
You know,
they'll grow if they have something to eat. But
and if everything else is not eating them, humans and every other fish out there.
And, you know, mullets survive. Their blueprint for survival is numbers. They're highly prolific fish.
In 2 years, we could have millions.
Their eggs have great viability. They hatch out easily. They grow quickly. That's their blueprint for survival is numbers, and that's
what... But here's the caveat to it, what's going to make it really hard to do this. If you get big numbers and Florida closes it, they go out more than 9 miles a lot of time to spawn. And the big purse seine boats sit out there at 9 miles and take the entire frickin' school. Because with a purse seiner, even if they're only getting 10 cents a pound, they can process 50,000 pounds.
That's true, but we also have, in addition to that high pressure offshore, we've got a lot of inshore pressure from the smaller boats. And
but when you combine it all up, it's bad.
Yeah.
But the problem is even if Florida closes it, we have to get a temporary closure within 30 miles of the west coast of Florida. No mullet be able to land anywhere in Florida. That what might do it is if you're not allowed to bring mullet in to Florida. You're not allowed to sell them in Florida. They would have to haul them all the way to Louisiana or Mississippi in order to sell them, and that just wouldn't be commercial. Make sense.
No,
so the way to do it is to close mullet and the commercial buying or selling of any mullet. Close the landing of it. Because otherwise they just go out to federal waters and bring it in and it's illegal fish. So we got to fix that loophole in it.
No, that makes sense. The other one to that, too, though, is because you're talking about a year-round food source for them, blue crabs are another major food source for all of our species.
Yeah, but that is such a money species. There's so much money in blue crabs because Maryland and all these states up there rely on Florida for their money. The blue crabs caught here, shipped up there, that's where they're making their money off of. If we shut them off, you've got a whole economic problem going on.
Okay.
And while I agree they should limit the catch, limit the traps, but if you eliminate catching crabs, you're putting a lot of people out of work. From a waitress in Maryland to the cook, the guy who owns the restaurant, the guy who ships the crabs, the guy who catches the crabs, the... You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's it's a big chain reaction there, yeah.
With the mullet, the price is so bad, there's nobody gets hurt.
Right, okay. I didn't think about that aspect of the chain reaction because I forgot how much of it is exported out of here to other states now.
Yeah, it's such an ordeal to go in and screw up somebody's life because, okay, it's going to benefit us better. Well, it's not killing us at this point. It's not critical. So if it's not critical, I don't think that many people's lives should be interrupted.
Okay.
See what I mean?
Yeah. No, that makes more sense.
It's just one of those things where when I look at an issue, I want to look at, okay, what's money for me? Because more snook and redfish and more trout, that's more money in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
All right? It's more fun for me to have when I go out. But I don't believe it's right for me to say, I want to make more money, but I'm going to hurt your income so I can do better.
Right.
I just don't believe that's the right thing to do. I don't. Speaking of which, I was talking to a guy today, and he was looking. He went to a boat show, and there was three rods some guy had standing there in a rod rack, and each one had a lure tied to it. And those were the only three lures you ever needed to have because those were the best. You ought to get those lures. And the guy came in today to buy those lures. And he was, and I'm going, why would you want to buy those three lures that work for that guy? Is that the kind of lures you use? Because some of them were crankbaits, some were twitch baits. I said, what do you fish with all the time? He said, well, I like the twin tail. And the old, I can't remember.
Mr. Twister.
Mr. Twister twin tails with a red jig head. He likes a white grub with a red jig head, twin tail, not a single tail, twin tail. And I said, so why are you buying these other ones? I said, do you actually use any of these you buy? He's like, well, no, I throw them for a little while, but then I go back to what I normally use. At least he was honest. And the truth of the matter is when people are buying, they come into the store because they saw a lure here or they saw a lure there. Somebody said, this is the best. Well, keep in mind, boys and girls, it's the best for that person. That's his best lures or her best lures. That's that person's best. Is it really yours? When my dad and I would fish, and we fished out a 15-foot boat or 12-foot aluminum boat or whatever we were fishing out of, my flats boat, he would be at one end of the boat. I'd be at the other. He's throwing a Johnny Rattler, a Gold Johnson Sprite, and maybe a mirror lure. Every once in a while, something else, but usually an old, the old style mirror lures, not the Miradines, the old original TT18, the 7M26s, the original old style mirror lures. I throw crankbaits a lot. I like throwing the Storm Twitch Stick. I like the X-Wrap. I throw a lot the Yozuri 3D Fingerling. I like these hard bait, crankbait styles. I throw a lot of jigs. I'd use the DOA Cal Shad. It's one of my favorite lures. I use the DOA head. I like a quarter ounce. And I use that white belly with the clear back with the black glitter, silver and black glitter, chartreuse tail.
Yeah.
Those are things I like throwing. Now, I don't fish a lot of jerk baits. I don't fish. Every once in a while, I throw mirror lures, but I usually fish the older style, not the newer ones, not the MR-17. I almost never fish it. But he's on the back of the boat throwing his lures. I'm on the front of the boat throwing mine or whichever position we happen to be in. And we both caught fish. And we both caught a lot of fish. We weren't throwing the same lures.
Not even close to the same lures in some instances.
Completely opposite. Versus a crankbait or, you know what I mean? Right. There was literally no similarity. And we both caught a lot of fish. But if we switched lures, neither one of us was going to catch crap. And it kind of goes to the point, this guy was really good with a twin tail grub jig. And I said, so why are you buying these? Well, the guy said they were real good and they were the only lures I ever needed to throw. I said, are you actually going to throw them? He's like, well, I'll throw them for a little while. I'll probably go back to my twin tail. I said, so let's expand your twin tails. Okay, you've got a twin tail Mr. Twister grub. Awesome lure. But why not get another twin tail? Something with a different sound, a different shape. And what we did was go to the Strike King Rage Claw. It's a crawdad-looking lure, but the two claws come around to form a twin tail grub. But now he's got something that looks like a crab, and the Rage Claw, the Rage stuff is awesome because on each one of the claws, there's a little flat edge on it. So they're going to go up and down a lot more. A curl tail, when it goes through the water, it's trying to reshape into that sickle form, like a question mark. And then it straightens out and comes back and straightens out and comes back, giving it that twin tail. But that's the pulse it uses. With the Rage, it's got those little kind of flat edges on it that makes it into a swimming action twin tail. So they're going up and down. Each one is going up and down, sometimes together, opposing, but they're not pulsing out quite as much. They're doing a little more up and down movement. So you got the modify of the twin tail from the pulsing to the up and down stroke. So it changes the tone, changes the sound dramatically while maintaining a similar aspect. Then I changed the body shape from just a grub into a crawdad, which crawdads look a lot like shrimp or with the claws, maybe a little blue crab or something like that. But now you've got a whole different visual of it. The crawdad can be worked darting it through the water the same way as you do a twin tail, but it really works awesome bouncing it up and down off the bottom. So now we got the basically the same lure, only different. We're modifying what he really does well and giving him more options in his own world. It's something that he can actually take out and will probably use. Rather than a lure he's going to throw a few times, and then it's going to go in the box. He says, oh, yeah, I got one of those. And that's about the extent of it. You paid $5 to $10 to say, yeah, I got one of those. Is that making any sense, RJ?
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, there was a time when I wanted one of everything in my tackle box, just in case, right? And what you end up doing is spending a lot of time tying and untying lures, because you'll throw one for about 10 minutes and nothing happens, and then you take that off and stick another one on and throw that for 10 minutes. And then finally you'll get something right. And I think what I learned from that process, there were about 4 or 5 lures in my tackle box that I caught fish with, and the rest just looked pretty.
Yeah.
It was real neat to open the top of that box and see everything in nice order, but the hooks that were nice and shiny and the body's nice and clean with not a mark on them, those are the ones I don't use.
Yeah. But you got one.
But I got one, yeah.
Hey, you got one?
I got one of those in 2 colors.
Yeah. I got those. Those are great lures, yeah.
But it does boil down to whatever you catch fish with, that's the lures you're going to use. And then when you use them a lot, you get good at them.
That's the key.
If you're bouncing back and forth between all different types of baits, you never get really good at one of them. You come to jack of all trades, but master in none. You get a couple of lures that you catch fish with, and when you use them a lot, you get better and better and better at them, so you catch more and more fish with those lures.
And why not just simply expand on what you're good with? When you're looking at lures, let's say you throw a fluke really, really well. That jerk bait, the soft plastic jerk bait. Mm-hmm. Now, you use a weedless worm hook in it, and you work that fluke. Now, the first thing I'm going to do with that is, rather than changing body styles, I'm going to change up my hooks. I'm going to use a weighted hook sometimes. Then I'm going to use an unweighted hook. Then I'm going to put a jig head in it. Now, the unweighted hook is going to allow me to dart it around. It's going to stay up in the water a little bit longer. It's not going to sink as fast. But sometimes you want to get it down. So I'm going to use a weighted worm hook where the weight is on the hook back closer to the middle of the fish, middle of the lure. It's not going to be right up at the nose. And that's going to give it that kind of lay down. It's not going to nose down, but it's going to kind of drift flat towards the bottom.
Sinks more horizontal rather than vertical.
That's what I was trying to say. But when you think about it, when you're twitching around a bait with a weedless hook with no weight, it's going to drift to the bottom eventually. People say, well, I want to go to the bottom. I need a weight. Let me put it this way. Unless it has flotation to it, anything you throw will eventually go on the bottom.
Right.
It's going to sink. So with an unweighted hook, it takes a very long time for it to drop. With a weighted hook, you can get that same, but you can get a faster drop, but you can kind of get that same action where it's a darting motion, you know, twitching around, darting, you know, action side to side, a little bit up and down. But as soon as you put a jig head on, it's an up and down action. You're not getting any more side to side out of it. But with the jig head, you can let it drop to the bottom, bang into the bottom, come up. You can dart it. You can throw it. If you're working it faster, the jig head is actually a better idea. But if I want to work it a little slower, keep it horizontal, let it drop a little bit, a little side to side, the belly weight on the worm hook is the best. If I want to spend all my time up close to the top, say the water's real shallow, I don't want the weight at all. Use the weight of the plastic to throw it.
Right. Okay.
But all I'm doing is modifying the one lure that I'm really good at.
Right. You just good. Well, confidence is the number one thing in your tackle box, no matter what it is. You know, if you don't have confidence in it, you're never going to throw it consistently and get proficient at it where you want to use it every time. But what you're saying is like modifying that lure where you think it might not necessarily be working as well that particular day. It might be that simple modification of you're used to using it without a weight. But yesterday was blooming cold. Adding that weight and making you slow the presentation down of that lure, still getting the same action, just a slower, deeper presentation, where those fish are going to be a little bit more lethargic and hanging in that little bit deeper water, changes it up and allows you still to have that confidence in that lure, but now you've just...
You can go a little deeper. Without the weight, you can go very, very slow, lots of twitches, more like a dying flutter. Mm-hmm. With the weight, you're going to be going a little faster, but you can go deeper. Mm-hmm. As soon as you put a jig head on, it's going to nose down. It's not going to belly down. It's going to nose down. But it's the same lure. You're still using your lure. You're still doing – you have all that confidence. It's your bait. And it's just like with the twin tail grub, I grab a crawdad, almost identical, works the same. But because it's a rage, you know, the Strike King rage stuff, it's got all that extra action to it. We've really changed that. So even if he uses it the exact same way as he does his other curl tail, completely different. Noise, presentation, all that, it's going to be different. He's more likely to catch fish if he has a variant on it. But he's more likely to use it if it's basically the same thing.
Right, and there's so many variables in catching fish: color, sound, scent, shape, motion, all those things. If you've got a dozen or more different lures that you're thinking about throwing, you're not going to get into the advanced side of saying, well, maybe, you know, the white's not working today and I should be using a pink. If it's a lure that you know, you can get the variations of colors in that lure, so you're still working the presentation with the confidence you have in that lure. You're just changing the colors on it, or you're changing the size on it. When you get into multiple lures in a tackle box, you forget all of that.
Well, the problem with it is like you say, you're not going to use them.
Yeah.
Maybe the MiraLure MR17 was going to catch the most fish of anything that day, but you weren't in the right place yet for it. You didn't leave it on the rod long enough to get there or to get to the right area with the fish. And by the, you know, you threw your favorite lure, you know, your curl tail, and it was on the rod for an hour. You found the fish and you caught fish, but you might have been able to catch, you know, instead of six, you might have been able to catch 10 or 12. But you wouldn't know that because you didn't use it. But if you had a modifier of the exact same thing, changes it just enough to get a different reaction, you could take your same catch, say you caught six, you could get that 10 or 12 just by changing that same lure, different sound, different, you know, a little different. But that could make all the difference in the world. But thing is, you got to keep it on the line. I think people are more apt to use what they know, what they got confidence in, if it's the same thing, only different.
No, I like that idea. I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
All right. But we beat the hell out of that topic.
But it was good. There's a lot of good information there and helps build some of that confidence and makes you want to go a little bit outside of your comfort zone, but not completely jumping ship.
Just trying to get people, when they come into the store, and thank you, everybody. I mean, the store does very well. But the hard part about it is, I don't want people spending money just to spend money. It doesn't make any sense for me, and it doesn't make any sense for them. But if we can get you closer to something that you will actually throw, that will actually catch fish, then we have a win-win. I can take the money, feel good about it, because he's going to go out, have a great time, catch fish. I'm going to make money. I don't have to go back to tying steel for a living or doing I-beams. You know, that's a win-win. If it's only good for me and I'm making money and the customers are buying stuff that doesn't really work, they're not going to come. If the customers are coming in and buying stuff that I'm not making money on or I can't make a living with, I'm not going to be there. It's got to be good for both of us. It's got to be good for the customer. It's got to be good for us that work there. It's a symbiotic relationship that if it's the best for both of us, we get to keep our jobs. They get to have fun. That's how it works. That's what I was trying to do with this guy, is figure that aspect out. How can we make this better for the customer and better for us? We get to take the money. and know we did something good, he gets to catch more fish. Maybe I'm just too weird.
Maybe, but that what you just said works really well. And that's what builds the rapport with your customers, too, is they know they're not going to get taken for a ride.
Well, when you're sitting
you want those three lures. Well, here's six different variations of that lure that you can buy also.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just trying to make sense out of it all, trying to make it good for everybody.
That's what we're trying to do with this show anyways. Let's make sense of some of the stuff that gets spread around that people think is gospel when it actually isn't.
Or just make sense of the overwhelmingness of it because that's you walk true. In and there's 100 different lipped plugs.
And that's just lip plugs.
And then 200 different colors and then 400 different sizes.
We're about 80% done putting the inventory into the computer, and we're just pushing 12,000 items.
Jeez.
So we're going to be somewhere, you know, 13 to 15,000 different items in the store.
Right.
So it's a bit overwhelming when you get into size, colors, all this and all that, but... You know, and we are going to try and be there to talk to you. I keep 3 to 5 people on per shift. It won't always happen. Sometimes we're going to let you down, but we're going to do the best I can not to.
But, absolutely.
You know, we're sadly human, and sometimes we're understaffed. Sometimes we're overstaffed. We try and guess, but we're doing the best we can. Just like when I go out fishing for jacks. This is an Austrian segue.
Nice.
When I would have 3 people on the boat, and they all hook up with a jack. I said, "What do we do? What do we do?" I said, "Wait for 2 people to break off, and we'll follow the third one." So where are these jacks that are going to really just control and dominate your life on the water?
Hey, you can be one person and get destroyed. I had a gentleman in just a little bit ago before we left that he got hit by a fish off of his dock that – his line was a little low on his spool, but he said it was about a solid 80 to 100 yards of line and just took him and peeled him off before he could even do anything. And I said it was probably one of those big jacks. Yeah. And he lives over in Burnt Store Isles, so my guess is that it was one of those big jacks because Burnt Store Isles and PGI, both those places, guys, this last...
Peace River, big jacks up in the river.
Yeah. You know, and they've been in the Myakka too, but the ones in the Myakka I've been hearing about are the smaller, like 3 to 5 pounders, which are still a blast.
And that's kind of what you find in Port Charlotte canals too. Mm-hmm. Up on the river, we get some really big ones. Mm-hmm. PGI gets I'd say 2 to 5 pounders, and then a few of the canals get some monsters.
Yeah, it's kind of it's weird because it'll go that 2 to 5 pound or it's 10 to 15 pound. There's right. not a lot in between.
And if you're listening to us up north, thank you guys, and I hope you're doing okay with the snow. I hope your power's on. Everything's working good. You know, because I've lived up there, and it's a bugger when everything goes off and it's snowing out and the whole house starts getting really, really cold. But if you're up there and you're thinking, oh, it's a 2-pound jack. Now, if you tied 6 largemouth bass together like Santa's reindeer, and at the head of it put a smallmouth bass that were all 2 pounds, that's what you get when you try and land a jack.
Yeah.
You put a smallmouth bass up where Rudolph's supposed to go and line up like 6 largemouth behind it, that's 1 2-pound jack.
Yeah, it's pound for pound one of the greatest fighting fish we have around here. I mean, if we've said
it anywhere. Anywhere in the world.
We've said it many times. If we could teach them to jump, they would literally have the status of a tarpon, if not better.
Oh, if a jack caravel would tail walk across the water, you would never be allowed to keep one. They'd be the most protected game fish in history.
Yeah.
I mean, I would vote for that. I would vote because they're amazing.
Absolutely.
But these little jacks, they hit crankbaits, they hit spoons, they hit shrimp under a bobber, they hit freeline baits.
Topwaters,
jigs.
Pretty much if it's a bottle cap with a hook in it and it's wiggling, they'll eat it.
I mean, throw your favorite lure at them, but keep in mind, most of the time when you're fishing jacks, you can see them. So do you want a sinker with a shrimp on it? Throw it out there and it's going to go right past the fish, right to the bottom. But I didn't catch any. Threw a shrimp at them. Yeah, did you have a sinker on? Well, yeah, I was fishing. Yeah, okay. Could you see the fish? Yeah. All right. Do you think there's a discrepancy here?
Yeah.
Maybe a bobber? Put a float on or get rid of the weights and let it go into the water free line. If I'm free lining for jacks, I'm going to hook that shrimp through the head. I'm going to cast it in that direction. And as soon as it hits the water, I'm going to treat it like it's a fluke or a jerk bait or twitch bait of some kind. I'm going to start tapping my rod, reeling, tap, reel. I want that shrimp to kind of dart around. If it's just sitting there, they're not keyed in on that. They're keyed in on everything trying to get away from them. If it's moving, they're going to eat it. If it's sitting still, they could go right by it. It's got to be moving, got to be escaping.
Absolutely. And they're not a bottom feeder, like you said. They're middle to surface feeders. They do not pick stuff up on the bottom, almost never. You know, so you've got to stay in that strike zone pretty regularly, no matter what you're throwing at them.
What about leaders for jacks? Because that seems to be
25-30 pound fluorocarbon mono.
They got little steel teeth, leaders, but nothing major.
They very seldom overbite the hook. You know, having a real thick leader and a jack is not critical. Very seldom do they overbite the hook.
Right.
You know, just really if you've got a standard shank hook or even a short shank, most of the time they're hooked up and the whole fight happens against the hook. Every once in a while you lose one. Most people lose it because they get impatient and start jerking on the rod.
Mm.
And then they pop the line, break their knots. Something will give at that point. But if you're a little bit patient, you got them. Kind of like a bonnet shark.
Exactly. Enjoy
they don't them. Overbite the hook hardly ever.
No.
You don't need steel leaders for the bonnet sharks because they're really the whole fight's taking place on the hook, against the hook, not the leader and up.
Right. Absolutely. That makes perfect sense.
Okay. The Gulf of Mexico. Fishing in the Gulf. It's too windy. Okay, next story. I'm thinking about it going, really? What kind of moron is going to go out and die to go fishing in the Gulf? You've got 300 other days to go out there, boys and girls. Stay out of there when it's windy.
Absolutely.
Is there fish there? Absolutely. Can you catch them? Sure.
Will they be there when the wind stops? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And they'll be a little hungrier, too.
Yeah, give them a break.
Less pressure. Definitely.
So, no. When you see the wind drop back down going to golf, until then, don't be foolish. You know, unless you're one of the guys that I don't get along with, then it's great in the Gulf. Go fishing out there. You know. So, let's see. I'm going to drop off. Crappie fishing is still a lot of questions about it. Now, if you're up north, crappie are still spawning. They're not done with the spawn yet. It's still going on. They are still bunched up. But it's even more critical now to find an overhanging pepper tree. When I fish crappie up north, I'm looking in the middle of the lakes in the deeper water areas, 10, 15, 20 feet of water or more, and I want to find a lot of bottom structure. Well, unless somebody drove a car into the canal, you're not going to find a lot of bottom structure there. Most of our canals don't have a lot of that. So crappies like hanging out in a lot of intertangled and intertwined branches. So when their babies are hatching out, they can have that cover. You know, they can the predators can't get into them through all those little branches like Christmas tree. Pile up 5, 6, 8 Christmas trees on the ice melts, the Christmas trees drop in the water, great crappie cover. We don't have ice to do that with here. And don't get caught throwing your Christmas tree in the canal down here. It won't be pleasant for you if you get caught. If you don't get caught, yeah, it's good crappie fishing. But pepper trees, not mangroves, pepper trees. Pepper trees have an unusually large, complicated tangles of roots and branches going into the water. That's the closest you're going to find a perfect crappie cover here in Southwest Florida. So if you've got a little boat, you're going to put in, you're going to look down the canal and see great big green bushy thing with red berries on it. You're going to go there, back off a little bit, cast your minnows up into there.
Except for the main thing is you're going to have to change your depths a lot to find out where they're at. Several guys I've talked to this week – One guy found them where they were right at 20 inches. My nephew, he had to go all the way up to 12 inches under his bobber before he started getting them. And another gentleman said the exact same thing. He was a foot under his bobber. That's where he's getting all his bites. And every one of the bites have been subtle. All they're seeing is the bobber just do a little tiny tick, almost like the minnow pulled the bobber a little bit. And the crappie are just sitting there holding on to it. They're not hitting it and pulling that bobber down or swimming away with it. It's a very, very subtle bite. And that was even during the cold front. So it's been a it requires definitely a little bit more observing your bobber closely.
Now, I just ordered a bunch of those quill bobbers. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have those in. And the best way to do it with those crappie is a quill bobber, you know, and then a very light split shot and the bait. You don't want the quill standing up straight, or if it's standing up straight, you got to watch it. As soon as you see that quill going back and forth, that's what you're looking for. That's the reason a quill bobber is better on these light bite fish than a round bobber. The round bobber, you just can't see it move right.
Right.
So anyway, I think the music is going to be starting anyway. I'm Fishin' Frank, fishinfranks.com. That's Robert, fishinfranks.com. That's RJ, kdwradio.com. And all of us have dots and comms, and hell, I probably got a coma going on. I just, y'all probably wish I was in one right about now. Fishin' Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, RJ in command and control. Thank you, boys and girls. Bye. I'm on fish.